term of office. All board members are community volunteers who receive no pay for their services. The members of the board are Chris Gilmore, nominated by the Gate City Bar Association, Matt Grosvenor, nominated by the Georgia Society of CPAs, Vic Hartman, nominated by the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners, Lisa Lang, nominated by the Atlanta Bar Association, Jerry Newmark, nominated by the Atlanta Planning Advisory Board, Wesley Tharp, nominated by the Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, Bing Wang, nominated by the 7 universities of the Metro Atlanta, and myself, Nicola Hines, and I'm nominated by the League of Women Voters, Atlanta Fulton County. Today, we also have the ethics officer, Jabu Sangover, and her staff are present, along with our Inspector General, Shannon Manigal, and her staff. A quorum is present. Let's begin the first order of business, which is the adoption of the agenda for tonight's meeting.
I move that we adopt the agenda for tonight's meeting.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Vic Hartman, I second.
Okay. It has been moved and second that we adopt an agenda for tonight's meeting. Any discussion on this motion? Okay, no discussion. Those in favor of the motion to adopt, say aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed, say no. Okay, the ayes have it. The agenda is adopted. Next order of business on the agenda is the minutes from our May 2021 meeting. Please take a moment if you have not had a chance to read the minutes. And when you do, I would look for a motion to adopt the minutes from our May 2021 meeting.
This is Chris Gilmore. I move that we adopt the minutes from our last meeting.
Okay. Do we have a second?
This is Bing. I second.
Okay. It has been moved and second that we adopt the minutes from our May 2021 meeting. Are there any discussion on this motion? Okay. No discussion. Those in favor of the motion to adopt, say aye.
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 Those opposed, say no. Those who are abstaining. Okay, the ayes have it. The minutes from our May 2021 meeting has been adopted. Okay, we'll move on to our agenda, which is the Compliance and Independent Procurement Review Division and the Inspector General's report.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight, I will provide an update on the activities of the Compliance Division since the May update provided by Deputy Inspector General Anthony Bennett. And then I'm going to get into some details about the Independent Procurement Review Division, which officially joined the Office of the Inspector General 2 weeks ago at the beginning of the city's fiscal year. So starting with compliance, I am extremely pleased to report that based on the positions that were originally allocated for this new unit, the Compliance Division is now fully staffed. Since the last board meeting, all three of our investigation managers began working, including the last, most recently last week. We're very, very excited about this. Generally, of course, because hiring this excellent team was the number one priority among competing high priorities in building this office. But also timing-wise, there's really been kind of a great confluence of events. First, our full staffing, but it's also along with the moving dates from those of us who had relocated to Atlanta, and then also the city's resumption of in-office work after the prolonged mandatory telework, and also the readiness of our temporary space at 98 Mitchell Street. In fact, as we're meeting tonight, Deputy Inspector General Bennett and I are actually working from our space here at 98 Mitchell Street. Now, we're still working on some key office items, like our printer copier, which awaits legislation before City Council before we can get that going. And we've been working with the city's Department of Enterprise Asset Management to get signage for our new space so we can announce our presence in our new location. But there have been some other developments, like the installation of landlines earlier this week, that has brought us much closer to kind of being and feeling that we have an established office. The acquisition and development of additional investigative resources takes us another step towards that process. After applying and receiving clearance, we gained access to two significant investigative databases. And also, with a review of practices from other jurisdictions and based on our collective experience in IG offices, Deputy Inspector General Bennett has been working to solidify our internal policies and procedures within an investigative manual. That manual will then guide all of our future investigations and those we currently have pending. A nod to the investigations. Now that we're positioned to begin our work, we're reviewing some of the matters that we had previously received with an eye towards sorting those that will be referred versus those will be filed and those that will be formally opened by us. And by the next board meeting, I think we'll be in a position to provide numbers for some of these dispositions. Before turning to the budget, I just want to give a quick update on the website. As we have previously reported, over the last several months, we've been working with the city for the development of the website for the Office of the Inspector General. I think it goes without saying that this is a crucial element of our office build out in terms of the website going far and helping us announce the presence of the office, providing details about the function that we perform for the city. And it will offer both a forum and direction for employees and public citizens about reporting potential misconduct. At this point, we've now received a demonstration of the site and are working very closely with AIM, the city's IT department, to revise the site in its development environment. We anticipate that the site will go live in the next few weeks, and we will absolutely keep you posted when it does. I want to end tonight's compliance division report by discussing the budget for fiscal year 22. I should note that we don't have end of the year totals for fiscal year 21 because we had a spate of spending at the end of the fiscal year that has not yet been processed. That spending included a number of items that both I've probably spoken about in March and Deputy Inspector General Bennett probably referenced in the May presentation. Primarily baseline supplies for the office and significant furniture purchases for both our temporary space and for our permanent space. Now, just 1 week after the last board meeting, we had our very first budget presentation for City Council, and I'm very happy to say that we were both well and warmly received. Well received in that we won funding for 4 additional positions for compliance. And that is a great start for much needed growth that we have for the office. I mean, it doubles our investigative staff. We also received additional funds for operating expenses that will fund some key projects for the office, including funds that we've earmarked for a public awareness campaign and also some kind of baseline needed resources like the purchase of vehicles so that we can conduct our investigations. But I think equally important was how warmly we were received. The council members expressed particular enthusiasm for this office and for the work that we'll perform. Individual council members made it clear that the council has very high hopes and expectations for the new division. And as I told them during the hearing, we very much look forward to working to meeting those high expectations. Turning to IPRO, the Independent Procurement Review Division, better known as IPRO, as I reported during the board's March meeting, since its formation more than 2 years ago, the IPRO team has been functioning entirely within the city auditor's office. And so while I've been working with the team since my start in January, because the city auditor graciously allowed me to sit on meetings so I could get familiar with its work and the workings, the team didn't formally transition into the Office of the Inspector General until July 1st. So first, allow me to introduce all of you to Michael Jones, who some of you might be able to see if you scroll one direction or the other. Michael is the manager of the Independent Procurement Review Team. Now, as small as the compliance team is that you're familiar with, the IPRO team is even smaller, with only 2 performance auditors, who also referred to as Independent Procurement Review Officers, that's IPROs, who are working under Mr. Jones's supervision. Now, it's a small team, but the division performs a tremendous amount of work. To give you a little bit of a view of that work, we included in your materials for tonight one example of the team's reports. IPRO generates a report like this for every review it conducts where the award is then presented to City Council. This kind of report is the end product of a very rigorous review and testing process that the team performs for every solicitation in the city with an aggregate value at or above $1 million. The IPRO team conducts its reviews in close collaboration and, whenever possible, in lockstep with the city's Department of Procurement. As it reviews these solicitations, the team is working to identify red flags of procurement fraud, undisclosed conflicts of interest, inconsistencies, and other errors. And then the team works to report some issues of concerns, which then allows some correction before the City Council actually considers legislation to approve the contracts. And we chose to include the particular report that you have in your board materials because we think that it highlights the value of the team's review. In the course of the review for this solicitation, the team found that one of the selected vendors for a city contract had failed to disclose that a recently former principal had actually been indicted, federally indicted, for fraud in a false invoice scheme for municipal work that was conducted in another state. That IPRO finding prompted a larger conversation in the council and with the Department of Procurement about how the city should be handling integrity concerns with its vendors. With IPRO's transition from city auditor, the team has had some changes. First, the division has had a physical move as it left City Hall and joined the compliance division in the temporary space at 98 Mitchell Street. Resource-wise, it was a priority before the transition to make sure that we secure independent resources for the division. And that's a provision that's kind of set forth in the Office of Inspector General legislation that it has its own budget. Report-wise, the historical reports that the IPRO team has issued have been housed on the city auditor site, and I think that those historical reports will remain there. But for those reports going forward, they're going to be included with the Office of Inspector General website. Finally, with the transition, there's been some discussion about the expansion of the scope of work of the division. Currently, the very lean staff works furiously to keep pace with the volume of city solicitations. But given the value of their review, we really plan to broaden the scope of work to include not just those mandatory reviews of the $1 million mark, but also some discretionary reviews of contracts outside of that threshold. That, too, is something that was envisioned by the original legislation. We also hope very much, and this is where the benefit of the proximity, I think, will be kind of an easy assist, to have the IPROs lend their significant procurement expertise to the compliance division for those procurement-related compliance investigations. Now, in order to perform that expanded work, it was also critical that this unit grow. Thankfully, City Council also agreed with the goals of this expanded work and budgeted additional funds for IPRO for fiscal year 22. Those funds will allow for the hiring of one additional performance manager slash IPRO, and will also establish the separate operating budget that I described before that the division really needs. And so at this point, Mr. Jones, Mr. Bennett, and I are happy to answer any questions you might have regarding the compliance or independent procurement review divisions.
Any questions from the board? Ms. Manigault, I do have one question. So are these IPRO reports, are they public information? Like, could I search the city website or something?
Very much. So if you go to the city auditor's website now, it's neatly organized, very user-friendly. You scroll into reports, there's a separate header for independent procurement review, and you'll see all of the reports that the team has issued to date. The practice has been to try to make sure that these are posted within 24 hours of city council consideration of the individual solicitations.
Did anyone else have any other questions for Ms. Manigault? None. I guess Ms.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can go on to your budget.
So the budget documents that are included with the materials pretty much have a breakdown of the how we look to apportion the funds for the year. It's not unlike the kind of breakdown that we had had from fiscal year 21. I think the real highlights are those that I included in my initial remarks in terms of the additional funding that allows us to increase our headcount. So that's a significant difference in terms of the personnel expenditures. And then also a few $100,000 added to the operating expenses that, like I said, are kind of principally kind of go towards what we hope for the public awareness campaign, but also support additional initiatives, including the procurement of some of our fleet.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions about the budget as presented? Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Manigault, and your team.
Thank you.
Okay, well, next order of business on the agenda is the financial disclosure updates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Santiago is going to give you a brief report on the financial disclosure update, and then we'll have Mr. Robinson give a brief update, program update, and then I'll wrap up with my report very briefly. Okay.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Good evening, board members. Again, Carlos Santiago, Deputy Ethics Officer. Wanted to provide tonight an update on our city financial disclosure process and where we are as far as enforcement goes. The 2021 statements. Just to back up a little bit, we started this process back in March with our notice of filings that went out on March 1st. Throughout the process, we've sent out over 16 emails and also provided warning letters to all filers who had not filed by the filing deadline, which was April 1st this year. We had a two-week grace period, which went to April 15th. And at that point in time, that's where the fines begin to accrue for late filing of the statements. So on June 9th, we convened and we took a look at who had filed their statements to date. And also we took a look and to see whether we had any reasonable cause to dismiss any cases before proceeding to the enforcement process. So we took a look at everything from did we have bad addresses? Were there any information regarding anybody who might have been on medical leave, FMLA, or any other circumstances that would have warranted reasonable cause before we proceeded to the next phase in this process? So on the 9th, we sent out notice of delinquency letters. These went out to any of our city officials or employees who were required to file, however, who had not either contacted us or provided reasonable cause for not filing or filing in a timely manner. Following as part of that letter, we provided an opportunity for anybody who received a letter to respond to us within a two-week period and provide a justification for being delinquent at that time. We did receive a pretty robust response from the notice of delinquency this year. We had, I believe, over 40 people who contacted us after receiving the letter. Some of those did provide us with reasonable cause for not filing. Some of those also we had some bad addresses, and we also had some other circumstances that were brought to our attention after we sent the letter. So. From that point in time, we've met to determine whether, one, it was a reasonable cause in those cases where they responded to us, and then two, based on that, who would we move on to the next stage in the process, which is where we currently are. So at this point, the office will begin to actually administer the sanctions for delinquent filing for this year. This process will be completed here in the next couple of weeks. And the anticipation is that we'll be sending out administrative decisions in the next couple of weeks. And then the anybody who receives the administrative decision will have 2 weeks to appeal the administrative sanction, and that appeal would go to the governing board. So we will, each of these administrative decisions goes with an appeal form, and we'll receive those back to our office. And once that appeal period is up, then we'll be able to identify which potential appeals would be on next month's agenda, which I believe the meeting is on the 19th of next month. So those would be what we're targeting for appeal hearings. Just to wrap up, I'll give you a little bit of the scope on what we're looking at. First of all, I just want to say thank you also to all the liaisons and everybody who got the Transparent Diamond Award for really helping us push through. We had 3,256 filers this year, which is a lot of individuals to get filed. The staff in the office did a great job. And to date, looking at where we are in enforcement, and we have 118 total delinquent filers, which includes late filers and non-filers. So we're looking at roughly about 3.5% out of that 3,256. So I think that that speaks volumes to the efforts of everybody involved in the various departments helping us get there. We have 66 total non-filers and 52 late filers. We do have, I think, one area that we're going to be focusing on is non-filer current employees. That number is at 31, which, well, in the grand scheme of everybody filing, it doesn't seem like that much. That's typically a number that we like to see at zero. So we're going to kind of work with as we can. We've done what we can. The liaisons have done their best, and we've also sent numerous amounts of communications to the city email addresses that we have for our current employees. So again, we'll just continue to proceed through the process and see whether any justification is provided in this next round. But that's pretty much where we are. And we've also received some cases have been closed because we've actually received payment of the penalties owed. So right now, that currently stands at there's been $250 in penalties collected thus far. So those were, and all each of those were late filers. But I can answer any questions pertaining to the enforcement period or to financial disclosure in our process.
So Mr. Santiago, I just have a quick question. I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. So sure. The letters that went out on July 9th, was that the 52? Were there 52 letters that went out, or was that a different number? You said it was 52 late filers. So I didn't know.
Oh, on June 9th, the notice of delinquency that went out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was, that number was actually a little bit larger than that. We received about 41 or 42 responses from the notice of delinquency letter. Out of those, I'd say, you know, roughly half to two-thirds provided some sort of justification. Either they might have had a technical issue with the filing, they may have had a bad address or a medical issue that we were not aware of at the time. So, yeah, I think that number was probably a little bit higher than the 66 total that I reported. We also had some people who did file immediately upon receiving the letter, and you know, some of them had justification and a few did not, but so those numbers are pretty close. The letter probably went out to about 130-140 people.
Okay. Thank you. That's my only question. Anyone on the board have any questions for Mr. Santiago? Thank you so much for your report.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, I believe what's next on the agenda.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Mr. Robinson will take a few minutes just to talk about our filing system and the e-learning project.
Okay, sounds good.
Hello, everyone. Madam Chair, board members, Inspector General, and Ethics Officer. A quick, brief update on where we are in our programs. We have several programs running, but I'm going to highlight three of them. Payback on financial disclosures for 2020. We had some issues with our previous vendor, but we're able to have that information downloaded to our particular ethics server. We completed that exercise in June. We expect to have those documents, financial disclosures, other reports available for public viewing by the end of August, if not sooner. As last year, we went to another vendor, EasyVote, which many of you filed your financial closure this year. That was phase one. We're entering phase two now, which was the development of the reports, those being conflict of interest, travel and city, gift to the city reports. Those are also expected to be completed and available by end of August. At that point in time, we collectively will be rolling out phase two. Phase two has got enhancements to the existing system, adding additional functionality for the admins via public portal, and greater reporting capabilities within the system itself. That brings us to the ethics training project we're working on. We're about 90% complete or more. Expected rollout by the end or mid-September, combining with our marketing and communication plans to inform the general public being the city employees and elected officials of the training available to them and constraints around timing of them and have to take the training. We're still working through those timings, but we should have that settled in the next week or so and roll that out, start our communication and marketing around that subject. Any questions on that?
Any questions from the board?
Thank you.
Thank you. We're moving along the agenda. Sorry, I was muted. Okay. Sorry, moving along the agenda, the Ethics Officer's Report, Ms. Sangova.
Thank you, and I'll just really just wrap up based on the two reports that you received. In terms of, one of the things I did want to point out from our report is that we did conduct ethics training for city council officials and staff, and that session was virtual, of course, but it was well attended. Additionally, I did want to reference that Mr. Santiago will be scheduled to appear tomorrow, actually. He's conducting part of the election training for candidates for the 2021 elections, and he will appear on behalf of Ethics. And I just wanted to make sure to make everyone know that we still plan out to send out our Ethics election advisory to all the candidates. But we do have to wait until the qualifying period ends in August, and we have the final list. But I do believe that Mr. Santiago's appearance at the briefing tomorrow will also open an opportunity for the candidates to ask questions in terms of their obligations in terms of ethics. And that will be tomorrow at 10 a.m. And I believe it will be on Channel 26 at 10 a.m. Moving on, in terms of our public education outreach efforts, we did launch recently our summer ethics newsletter, and that was disseminated citywide. And we're happy to share that with the board if you wish to see that. Staff in our office, in terms of Mr. Santiago and Mr. Mason, have met with IG staff just in terms of talking about potential referrals through the integrity line. We did plan the virtual award ceremony, which we all, you know, participated in earlier. Of course, it's not like the actual physical award ceremony, but I think we made the best of it under the circumstances. I think Mr. Santiago already gave you our report on financial disclosure enforcement, and we expect any appeals that are received to be held at the August meeting. And as far as the e-learning course, which has been one of the things that we've been working on, trying to get that launched, and definitely with the addition of Mr. Robinson to our staff, as he mentioned to the board, we hope to launch that in September. And if we can move on to the budget, so I can go ahead and report on that and answer any questions you may have. We successfully finished our FY21, fiscal year 21 budget year by completing and reconciling all transactions. We do have some expenses, of course, that were waiting to be resolved, but they're still accruing. But we did spend as anticipated for FY21, given the fact that we were still remote and in the midst of the pandemic. In terms of our FY22 adopted budget, that is in the packet for your review. We were able to get an increase for FY22, and that will accommodate the new program manager position, which is being filled, of course, by Mr. Robinson, and some other anticipated projects that we have for the new budget year, which, of course, includes expanding the filing system, which we talked about earlier, as well as some e-learning opportunities, two of our critical functions for ethics. And that's pretty much all I have, if there are any questions from the board.
Do we have any questions for the ethics officer's report? Hearing no questions, we'll move on to further down the agenda. Public comments. Do we have any public comments this evening?
We do have one public comment, Madam Chair. And I'll go ahead and play that.
Okay.
Hello. I'm concerned that this board is not committed to the transparency that is espoused in the mission statement that is printed at the bottom of your agendas. Until recently, there were no financial disclosures on the AtlantaEthics.org website for 2020 or 2021. Now these are available by request only. This is an election year, and we are plagued with elected officials that have racked up numerous ethics violations. Here's a list of current and former city officials, a partial list, with ethics violations. Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms did not comply with the state ethics panel and was fined $37,000. Ethics King Michael Bond, has he paid his restitution? Ethics Queen Cleta Winslow, a three times violator. Natalie Archibong, Kwanzaa Hall, Caesar Mitchell, Tracy Reed, the brother of Kasim Reed, Lamar Willis. It is of paramount importance that elected officials file financial disclosures, and this board makes those reports available to the public. It is inexcusable that the 2020 and 2021 reports are not readily available. Please post them to the website. Thank you.
Actually, I was going to say, I'm going to leave that to you, Ms. Sangova.
Yes, Madam Chair. Can I respond to that?
Yes, please.
All right, so in terms of the, you know, thank you in terms of, we definitely want to get comments from the public. But just to be clear, first of all, Section 2814 of the code does not require, and let me read that, provides in part that the ethics officer shall maintain all completed disclosure forms as public documents available for public inspection immediately upon filing. So that's what the code reads. So therefore, based on the reading of this provision, the 2020 and 2021 disclosure reforms must only be made available for public inspection, and we have the reports. Part of the program updates that Mr. Robinson gave was that we are working diligently to post the 2020 reports and 2021 reports. And part of the reason was that we were in between vendors. But we are providing those reports upon request. We've done so promptly with no delay, so we are in compliance with the Open Records Act. And lastly, I would say is that the code does not require us to publicly post statements. We've done so over the years to make the forms easily accessible to the public, and we plan to continue to do so, and that should be done in the next few months.
Thank you for that comment.
Great. And Mr. Gilmore? I guess I just wanted to repeat it for the record that, you know, citizens that would like to review financial disclosures that are filed with the ethics office can do so by going to the ethics office or emailing or calling, but getting in contact with the ethics office to be able to access those financial disclosures.
That is correct. And we do have them available, and we've made them readily available. And we understand that, you know, this is an election year, which is why we've been working frantically to make sure that we respond. We've received requests, and we've responded within 24 hours, which tells you how seriously we take requests from the public for just these 2 years. And guaranteed, unfortunately, we had some issues with the vendors, the vendor that we used in 2020, and this was during the pandemic. But for that, the forms would be also accessible, similar to past years. And that is something that we take seriously, and we plan to make it available. But just to be clear, the forms are available for public inspection at this time. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Angola. Ms. Rees, I believe that was the only public comment.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. Next on the agenda is announcement. So our next board meeting, which will be the appeals meeting, will be Thursday, August 19th, 2021, 6 p.m. This will be also a remote meeting, tentatively. I'm not sure, since we're into August now. But that's the date, Thursday, August 19th, 2021, at 6 p.m. Thank you, everyone.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me just stop recording.
Thank you.
Sorry, I'm so sorry. Okay. Yes. Can I get a motion to end the meeting for tonight?
I move that we adjourn the meeting.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Seconded.
I think that was Wes. Yeah. Second. Okay. It's been moved to second. Any questions? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Okay. The meeting has been moved second and with no discussion, and all the ayes have it. This meeting has officially ended.
Thanks, guys.
Let's get to the email. I was trying to get people to stay on.
I thought you wanted people
to stay on. I did want these people to stay on, and it's like everyone just kind of left, so I guess I'll just send an email.
I think we're still on channel 26.
That's what I was going to say, waiting for the recording to stop.
Yes.
Once we get off the few that are still on. Are we still on? Okay, I think we're still recording. I'll just send an email to everybody.
Recording stopped.
Now it stops. Okay. So even though it's only like myself and Vic as the only board members and stuff, so I was going to see in August if we want to do an unofficial outdoor type of meet and greet, because, you know, we have a whole new office that's come on board. We have some new faces that are on the board. So that's what I was asking everyone